The creation of Eve, Genesis 2:18. And Jehovah God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him, which may be before him." We have just seen how the church was constituted by the word and by the establishment of a certain day, place, and order of worship. For civil government, there was as yet no need, while nature was innocent and without sin. Now, domestic government is instituted, for God now makes the solitary Adam a husband by giving him a wife and uniting her to him of whom Adam had need also for the generation and multiplication of the human race. And as we have observed above, with reference to the creation of Adam, that God created him with deep purpose of mind and counsel, some here see that Eve also was created with profound counsel and wisdom of design. By all this, Moses would show that man was a singularly excellent creature, and that he partook both of the human and the divine natures of divinity and immortality. Man, therefore, is a more excellent creature than the heaven or the earth or any other creature which God made. And Moses would also impress us with reference to the other part of human nature, namely, woman, that she also was created with a peculiar counsel and design of God. And the object of Moses in this particular point of his divine instruction is to show that this sex also had great concernment in that state of animal but innocent life in which Adam was created, and in that state of a spiritual and eternal life also, which he expected. For the female sex was necessary for the generation and multiplication of the human race. Hence it follows that if the woman had not been deceived by the serpent and had not sinned, she would have been in all respects equal to Adam. For her now being subject to her husband is the punishment laid upon her of God since sin and on account of sin, as are also all her other troubles and perils, her labor and pain in bringing forth children, with an infinite number of other sorrows. Woman, therefore, is not now what Eve was at her creation. The condition of woman then was inconceivably better and more excellent than now. She was then in no respect whatever inferior to Adam, whether you consider the endowments of her body or those of her mind. But we may here inquire when God says, "It is not good that the man should be alone." What is that good of which God is speaking, seeing that Adam was righteous and had no need of the woman as we have, who bear about with us our flesh all leprous with sin? My reply is that God is speaking of a common good, or the good of the species, not of personal good. All personal good Adam already possessed. He enjoyed perfect innocency, but the common good of which all other animals partook, he possessed not. He could not propagate his species by generation. Adam was alone. Nor had he as yet a companion for that wonderful work of generation and the preservation of his species. The good, therefore, here divinely expressed, signifies the multiplying of the human race. In that same manner also Adam, although innocent and righteous, did not as yet possess that high good to which he was created, namely, a spiritual and glorious immortality, to which he would have been translated of God in his appointed time if he had continued in his innocency. The meaning of good, therefore, in the text is that Adam, being himself a most beautiful creature, possessed, as far as his own person was concerned, everything he could require. But there was yet wanting to him one thing, the good of God's blessing, the generating and multiplying of his species, for he was alone. Now, as nature is corrupted by sin, woman is necessary, not only for the multiplying of the human race, but also for the companionship, help, and protection of life. For domestic government needs the ministration of women. Nay, such is our wretchedness by the fall of Adam, that, to our shame and sorrow, be it confessed, we have need of woman as a remedy against sin. Wherefore, in contemplating woman, we must consider not only the place in domestic government which she fills, but the remedy for sin which God has made her to supply, as the Apostle Paul says, To avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. 1 Corinthians 7:2. And as a matter of divine sentiments, also eloquently observes, marriage was instituted in paradise as a duty and obedience to God, but since the fall it is a remedy also for sin. Wherefore we are obliged to adopt a union with this sex to avoid sin. This is indeed a sad and disgraceful confession to make, but it is the truth. For there are very few now who take unto themselves wives purely as a duty of obedience to God, according to his original will in the creation of man as male and female. Other animals, however, have no necessity of this kind. Therefore they, as a rule, come together once in the year only, and are contented with that intercourse, as if by this fact they said, "We come together as a duty to God." But it is far different with men. They are compelled to have recourse to their union with wives in matrimony to avoid sin. Hence we generate and are born in the midst of sins on both sides. For our parents do not come together as a pure duty to God, but as a remedy also, for the sake of avoiding sin. And yet it is by means of this very remedy, and by this very miserable state of things, that God fulfills his original blessing pronounced upon male and female when he created them. And thus men, though in sin and with sin, generate and are generated. But this would not have been the case in paradise, had man continued in the innocency of his original creation. Generation in that state would have been a most holy yielding of obedience to God, utterly free from that impure lust which now exists. And children would have been born in original righteousness and rectitude. They would have known God immediately at their birth without any instruction or admonition. They would have spoken of his holy name, praised him, and given him thanks. But all these glorious things are now lost. Yet it is profitable to us to think upon them deeply, that we may hold fast some sense of the real state in which we now are, namely, under all the effects of original sin, and that we may rightly contemplate also the original condition of Adam, a state of perfect righteousness, which state we hope again to enjoy in all its blessedness at the restitution of all things. Acts 3:21. With respect to the divine expression, "let us make," I have already observed that Eve was created as well as Adam by a peculiar counsel of God, in order that it might be manifest that she was a partaker with him of a better and an immortal life, a hope not possessed by any of the other living creatures, who live a natural life only, without any hope of an eternal life. That which the Latin renders "like him" in this passage is in the Hebrew, "which may be before him." God, by this expression, also distinguishes the human female from the females of all other living creatures, which are not always before their mates. But woman was expressly created that she might be before her husband always and everywhere, even as the emperor, who calls the life of married persons an individual life, whereas the brute female requires her mate only once in a whole year, and after she has conceived, she returns to her own kind and takes care of herself. Of her young, which were brought forth at any previous time, she takes no care whatever. She does not cohabit with her mate always. The nature of marriage among mankind, however, is utterly different. There the woman is married by the man that she may be before him always, and may cohabit with him as one flesh. And if Adam had remained in the state of innocency, this individual life or cohabitation of man and woman would have been most sweet and delightful. The embrace itself also would have been most holy and reverential and worshipful of God. There would have existed none of that impurity and shame arising from sin which now exists. Is not this fallen state of man most awful to contemplate? For in its holy reality, there was nothing more excellent, nothing more admirable in all nature than the fulfillment of the divine law of generation. It was an act of obedience to God, the highest which man could perform next to praising and lauding his glorious name, which obedience Adam and Eve rendered unto God, in as much holiness and freedom from all sin as when they were engaged in acts of praise and adoration. The fulfillment of this law of nature and of God indeed still continues. But how wretched are these present remnants of the original innocency! How horribly deformed by sin, pollution, and baseness of every description! All these things are deplorable evidences of nature's original sin. For the great and glorious ends of creation, there was need of the woman as a helpmeet for man. For man alone could not generate, nor could the woman generate alone. As the Apostle says, neither the man nor the woman had power over their own bodies for that high end. Hence, the loftiest praises of each sex are that the male is the father and the woman the mother of the generation of mankind. The wife, in this high sense also, is that helpmeet of the husband. But as we have repeatedly said, if we look at the state of originally created innocency, the generation of man has lost all its excellency, its pure delight, its holiness, and its worshipful obedience to God. Moreover, in this age and at this day, you may find many who wish they had no children at all born to them. And this, far more than barbarous inhumanity and enormity, is found more particularly among princes and nobles, who frequently abstain from marriage for the sole reason that they have no posterity. Still more base is the practice found in those princes who suffer themselves to be counseled and persuaded not to marry, lest their families should become too large for civil purposes. Such men are indeed worthy of having their names blotted out from the land of the living, as the punishment of their contempt of the laws and intents of God. Who is there that would not execrate such swine-like monsters as these? These inhuman beings, however, still manifest, in many base particulars, the nature and depth of original sin. Were it not for the consequences of this mighty sin, we should all admire the fulfillment of the law of God in generation, as one of the highest acts of obedience and worship of God, and we should extol it as one of the greatest gifts of God, with its due praise and admiration. From the above inhuman abuse and contempt of marriage have arisen those numerous reproaches of the female sex, which celibacy has greatly augmented, whereas it is one of the greatest of his blessings that God has preserved for us woman, even against the wishes and the wills of such inhuman beings, both as a divine means of generation and as a remedy against the sin of fornication. In paradise, woman would have been indeed a helper in our duty and obedience to God, and in our fulfillment of his command to be fruitful and to multiply and replenish the earth, Genesis 1:28. But now, woman is in a very great measure a medicine and remedy for sin, so that in truth we can now scarcely mention the name of woman without shame. Most certainly we cannot unite ourselves to her without some sense and blush of that shame. The mighty cause of all this is original sin, for in paradise the union of man and woman would have been wholly free from the thought of shame or impurity. The whole union would have been looked upon and felt as a duty of obedience to God, ordained by himself and sanctified by the blessings he pronounced upon it. This same calamitous state, on account of sins, rests upon us also, even in the midst of our own spiritual gifts. For although we may have faith and live in faith, yet we cannot be free from doubt, fear, and the sensible awe of death. These just punishments of original sin, our holy fathers, in the faith, deeply felt and saw. That which now follows is, as it were, a repetition of what has preceded concerning the creation of Adam, by which repetition Moses would more conveniently arrive at his intended description of the manner in which woman was created. In reading what follows, therefore, we must consider Adam to have been already created.